It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, Dialogue Conspiracy number 226, July the 19th, 1976. There are a lot of things I would like to talk about this week, but I'm going to push them aside, hopefully, till next week. One is the Democratic National Convention, and I would like to do one entire program on why I am very impressed by Jimmy Carter and will work hard to try and get him elected in November. I thought the convention was impressive. The opening Congresswoman Hale Boggs, the widow of Hale Boggs from Louisiana, who's now representing Louisiana in the House of Representatives, was there up on the rostrum taking roll call from the various states. And I couldn't help remembering how her husband was killed over Alaska. I had an article recently from the St. Petersburg Times in Florida, St. Petersburg, May the 14th, 1976, written by Robert Lee Lewis, who said that Hale Boggs was murdered and dumped out in a 10,000-foot square mile of timberland in Alaska, that the pilot of that airplane is now living in Australia, that they had changed numbers on the plane when it landed in Fairbanks, Alaska. Hale Boggs was on the Warren Commission with Gerald Ford, and at the time of his death was making links and connections between the Watergate defendants and the Warren Commission and the murder of his work on the Warren Commission and the murder of President John Kennedy in 1963. Also at the Democratic Convention was Jackie Kennedy Onassis, who had made her first appearance since the Democratic Conventions where her husband was nominated, and Mrs. Jimmy Carter smiling and speaking with Mrs. Robert Kennedy, the widow of Senator Robert Kennedy, who was killed on the eve of his California primaries. And up on the roster with Jimmy Carter was George Wallace, crippled from his Watergate-type assassination, the assassination attempt where he was injured and crippled in May 1972. He was up at the rostrum in his wheelchair. And then along with George Wallace, who was always known as a white racist, was the father of Reverend Martin Luther King, who gave the benediction of this historic occasion. Mr. King made reference, Reverend King, to having gone to heaven that day, and that these particular persons he visited were in that convention hall. They weren't dead, they were only in a different place. And then he wound the whole affair up with a Hebrew prayer from the Old Testament. May the Lord bless you and protect you. May he let his countenance shine upon you. And it was a grand finale of a lot of people whose lives were touched when the Democratic Party was torn apart. People like Hale Boggs and George Wallace and Ted Kennedy, who was there, and Jackie Kennedy and Ethel, and the Martin Luther King family. Coretta King was up there. And I had a lot of feelings about the Democratic Convention, and I will share them with you at length, hopefully real soon, probably next week. The portion of Dialogue Conspiracy today that I want to spend time on, I'm receiving a lot of telephone calls about it, and I'm making a lot of long-distance calls, has to do with the kidnapping of the 26 children in Cowchilla, California, this past week. Many of you say, well, why Cowchilla? And some of you say, I hope you're going to talk about it today. The children weren't killed. The bus driver wasn't killed. And you might say, well, what does that event, the kidnapping, have to do with the political assassinations and deaths that I've studied in the past, such as the killing of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the Wallace shooting, the Manson affair, or the accident at Chappaquiddick? A large part of my research, a great deal of it, has to do with what are, I call them, political murders, in that they change the political climate of the state and of the country. They're cultural violences, and particularly the California violence syndrome, which I have titled the California violence syndrome, otherwise translated as Watergate West. And in time, when it's examined very closely, someday you will see that these specific political murders in California are part of a pattern that I believe was not random, was not hit or miss, but is linked to the same kind of terrorism that was done in Germany before Adolf Hitler had full control of the country. The spread of terror through the country was a very important part of the technique of Adolf Hitler. And I'm absolutely convinced that there is a connection with hard evidence that will be put together, just as I was convinced there was a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy as early as 1963. There will be hard evidence to Watergate West, the California violences. And if you take a map of California and mark it out, you don't have one handy while I'm talking, but I took a map of California along with another friend who's doing work of this type and drew a triangle and then a long line to connect the pockets of California violence, which I have studied for quite a while. At the top is Yuba City, which was the area that Juan Corona was charged with mass murders, 25 murders at Yuba City. And when you pass Yuba City, you go down past Vacaville, which was the home of the SLA, where Donald DeFries was sent when he worked for the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department, and then met with Colston Westbrook of the Central Intelligence Agency Phoenix program at Vacaville. Then down to Vallejo and Martinez, where the bus accident took place recently, where approximately 26 students were killed, choir students, traveling from Yuba City, and were killed at Martinez. To the San Francisco Berkeley area, where Patty Hearst was kidnapped, Dr. Marcus Foster was killed, the Zodiac killings took place, Lawrence Kwong, who was killed after he left KGO and shot Ben Munson, and Popeye Jackson, the head of the United Prisoners Union, was killed. But you take Yuba City down to the Martinez bus accident, the Juan Corona pocket of 26, down to the Martinez area where the bus accident took place, where the brakes were damaged. And then there's another trial to Livermore, where these particular kidnappings, these children were taken with their bus driver to Livermore. There's a triangle there. And then heading south in the Santa Cruz area was the murder of Dr. Oda and his family, and then the murders of Herbert Mullen and John Frazier and Murray Kemper. John Frazier was linked to the Oda family. And I'll go into those in little detail. And then the southernmost point of these pockets of violence is the Los Angeles killings of Sharon Tate and the LaBianca family and five persons in the home of Sharon Tate. Eyeglasses were found on the premise of those killings that have never been identified. And I've received information from one party in particular and the suggestion of the possibility that the eyeglasses found there were prescribed by Dr. Oda, who was an eye doctor up in Santa Cruz. And the defendants that were charged in the Sharon Tate murders were never able to account for where the eyeglasses didn't come from the victims or the defendants in this case. And there is possible link with these eyeglasses to the northern areas of violence. The heart of the operation comes from Sacramento. As I say, it leads over to Vacaville. Sacramento is where Charles Manson went as soon as he got out of jail in Southern California and picked up his bus and picked up the money and credit cards and the chicks to travel around with the Manson family for 17 or 18 months before they went to the Spahn Ranch in California. This group has the protection of the Attorney General of California, Evel Younger, with his links to the military, and I believe that they're links to the CIA, the FBI, the criminal conspiracy section of the LAPD, and there's a link also to Hawaii, a military hospital in Hawaii, where some of these defendants or persons involved in these murders have been transported to the island over there in the company of female agents in particular. That has not yet been broken by hard investigation, but some leads that I have on at least three of persons involved in these various murders were transported there and then returned. Juan Corona was charged in May 71 with killing 25 itinerant farmers in Yuba City. There were 25 there. John Frazier was convicted November 71 of killing Dr. Victor Oda in Santa Cruz and Mrs. Oda and their two sons and their secretary. There were seven murders there. Edmund Kemper was accused of killing eight women in May of 73. One was May in 72. There were two girls murdered, two more in September of 72, another girl in January 73. He was charged with 8 deaths, and Edmund Kemper is the person now asking for a lobotomy to erase his mind, or that part of his mind that was responsible, he says, for these killings. And the Oda case and the Kemper case involved witnesses in narcotic traffic or narcotic deaths, and Herbert Mullen was linked to narcotics and drugs at Yuba City. At the time, Herbert Mullen was charged with 6 deaths in the Santa Cruz area. And the Oda family murders, the assaults, the men, John Frazier, Edmund Kemper, and Herbert Mullen, have never properly been investigated except by the present DA at the time, was Peter Chang. And they never got the investigative work behind them that should have been done. Just like the killings of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, or the Wallace shooting, were never done by the law enforcement. Even though private investigators gave them all the leads, the law enforcement never gave the support to the private investigators who turned in the leads. Another killing that is linked to the Watergate defendants that somebody brought me information about that I can put directly into the Washington Watergate defendants, the same people that are behind the Reagan nomination at the present time, that were behind Spiro Agnew, that helped get Richard Nixon out of office, were linked to the Leslie Perloff murder at Stanford. She was leaving the North County Law Library February 15, 1973. And I had called the Sheriff's Department and given them name of a particular person that I was told was not only involved in this murder, but somebody had brought him to my home, and I had met him. And the law enforcement would do nothing on this case, and they closed their eyes on this case. The newspaper articles at the time of the Herbert Mullen case said that it was tied to Yuba City, and that's where the Juan Corona case was. And there was no physical evidence to link Juan Corona to those itinerant farmers, those that were murdered, the 25 farmers, but he was convicted on circumstantial evidence, just as Lee Harvey Oswald was blamed for the killing of John Kennedy on circumstantial evidence. And the newspaper articles in 1973 said that there were drug links in the slayings at Santa Cruz. One of the people that was a witness to a narcotics case that was heading for Superior Court just before she was murdered by Edmund Kemper was Cynthia Ann Schall. And my Santa Cruz listeners know what I'm talking about in regards to these particular cases and the nest of worms that the police chief up there linked to the LAPD. These cases have never been solved. There's another article, January 28, 1973, slaying of 5 related to drugs. This was the Mullen murder, and I have many, many articles on the San Francisco violence. Well, these 26 children and their bus driver were kidnapped in Chowchilla, California, this last Thursday, July 17th, the same day as the Democratic National Convention convened in New York City, and Jimmy Carter was selected as the nominee. Presidential nominee Jimmy Carter and his running mate were visibly pushed out of the news. This bus case took the headlines, naturally, national, local. It's dramatic. It's potentially dangerous. Innocent children would appeal to anybody's imagination. They weren't travelers on some luxurious voyage like these hijackings. They were innocent children on the way home from summer school, the next to last day of summer school, from a swimming party. The sheriff in the town of Chowchilla has been told by way of telephone, this is only the beginning. There was a female voice in this. There are females involved in these other conspiracies as control agents. By the time some of you receive the tapes of this show, the suspects may be arrested. But I think of Arthur Brammer and Sirhan Sirhan and Lee Harvey Oswald as having been arrested and yet having been only a drop in the bucket or the tip of the iceberg. So the thing we have to look for is even if a couple of men are brought in or two are brought in and two are escape, or if they're shot on escaping, this is only the tip of the iceberg. Let's see if they bring in a woman. There's a woman involved in every one of the major kidnappings we've had that I've charted as being counterintelligence since the Patty Hearst kidnapping. It was a woman who called the sheriff and said it's only the beginning. The federal and local authorities are lost for a motive. I'm making comparisons now as I run down some thoughts that I want to share with you. The similarities to the past assassinations and why I think this is a larger conspiracy than just a few men putting these people in that tomb where they would have died within a few days without any more water or air. Always we got these motiveless crimes, no demands for the release of the prisoners. The people are asking why it happened. We had the senseless, motiveless Lee Harvey Oswald and Arthur Bremer, shooting of George Wallace with his silly grin and no political statement, James Earl Ray with no apparent reason to have even been a patsy or involved with Martin Luther King, a more of a reason for Sirhan because of his being kicked out of Palestine when Israel became a nation. I could see where he could be talked into believing that Robert Kennedy was favoring Israel. But the other major crimes, what we call the senseless crimes, which aren't senseless at all, always motiveless and always senseless, do have a reason, and they affect our thinking. They affect the candidates that are coming out, and they can use terrorism as one of their big selling points. I've predicted for quite a while that the counterintelligence military, the Phoenix program that worked in Vietnam in terror and fear, is operating in the United States. Their most dramatic action was kidnapping Patty Hearst and the forming of the SLA. And they started setting that up in 1972. And I also predicted that any possible kind of violence would be coming along our way if the Democrats had a winning ticket. And with Fritz Mondale and Jimmy Carter, they have one. And we can expect anything from an atomic bomb being dropped in a city and blaming the terrorists to chemical warfare coming along, or the seeping of the gas at Utah, or continuous kidnappings and large assaults on population. This is what Operation Chaos was about. The CIA did it in every other country that they were going to overthrow. They had charted plans of testing people's emotions against each other. And Operation Chaos was part of the CIA plan, and it could be applied to this kind of terror. Both parties are running against each other in November, the Republicans and Democrats. Because of the scandals of Watergate, the Republicans can't run on law and order after Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew and the new FBI burglaries and so forth, but they could run on domestic terrorism and not condoning the violence and being strong against this type of thing. In the meanwhile, these candidates can get a lot of television time. They're very eminent. Ronald Reagan is directly linked to the military LEAF plan, the Garden Plot, the martial law plans that would be used in cases where we get upheaval. He's, in fact, just recently, this last week, he was named by Warren Hinkle as being part and parcel of, in quotes, the next layer of Watergate politics in California. Warren Hinkle was a former editor of Ramparts magazine, and he's written some books. And just this week, this Sunday, in the San Jose Mercury, he said Ronald Reagan has links with the police, the FBI, and, in quotes, an entire private industry of agents breaking in, turning in information to police. He made the prediction that Reagan's story, when it unfolds with regard to illegal scandals in the state of California, will make Nixon look like a Quaker saint. And it's this kind of link of Ronald Reagan to the UCLA school to want to study the causes of violence, and to the counterintelligence group that was here when he was governor of California before Jerry Brown came in, that we have to watch. That's why we have to watch the past violences that I briefly ran down with you, and then we have to watch the current kidnapping, because these things were planned for the 1976 elections and on after that, I'm absolutely convinced. Not only was the news taken off about Jimmy Carter and the interest went to these children at all levels, national and local, but out of the mothballs came the U-2 spy planes. They're used domestically now to, in quotes, to fight fire. The U-2 was called in to find the bands or the bus of the children, and helicopters were buzzing over Carmel Valley the other evening. Just the school bus that was located was 200 miles away from where I live, but over my home and people who live in Carmel Valley, we had military fighting planes with full lights out on, and fighting equipment brought out that cost thousands of dollars, fly over the hills here when they already had located the van. And then out came the National Guard that has been prepared for food riots and domestic riots and martial law that are working at Camp Roberts. And the point is that this was a military operation calling out the U-2, calling out the National Guards and the special police. Not that it didn't warrant it to find these people, but the point is that the bus driver and the children were found without them. And yet all this military hardware doesn't locate them. The children dug their way out without any help. The U-2 and the military hardware and the National Guardsmen didn't do one thing to save the lives of these people up to that point. They saved their own lives. And you have to ask yourself, how much domestic military hardware do we need when these people not only dug their way out, but there was a tip-off on the telephone telling them to go to the Livermore dump area, which I'll read to you. Another thing that happened at this kidnapping time was the FBI was headlined in the news for being in disarray. The same evening that the kidnappers were being located, the FBI had press conferences, Mr. Clarence Kelly, Charles Bates from San Francisco, assuring us that they were right on top of it. But along with the FBI being the great protector of these farm children or anybody else, the FBI Associated Press story said that they're under siege. Investigators versus investigators. And the same day we read that one FBI agent in New York named Joseph Furrer, F-U-R-R-E-R, took the Fifth Amendment 80 times in a court trial in New York City regarding FBI burglary, wiretapping, mail tampering, and other harassments. There also was an AP Wire story saying that the Justice Department report of the FBI could, in quotes, be more devastating than recent congressional inquiries. And it also goes into kidnappings. So while the FBI is being smeared, and when the same evening that the second top agent under the FBI was fired by Mr. Clarence Kelly, the FBI was getting the press coverage of helping out with the children with their kidnapping in Chowchilla. The FBI got into the case. As soon as the children were found, the FBI got out of the case. The people up there are indignant. They want them to help find the kidnappers and bring this thing to a halt and end this terrorism because they've been told it's going to happen again. There's an article in the San Francisco Chronicle today. FBI agent in charge, Charles Bates, said that there were no federal laws that so far that have been violated, so that his office is closing the investigation of the kidnapping of the children, the bus driver. But Madera County Sheriff Bates, this is another Bates, who was a former FBI agent, was highly critical of the FBI withdrawing from this case. He said it left him with only 47 men in his department, and he sent a telegram to Attorney General Edward Levy, saying that they left a vacuum that they couldn't fill, that the taxes the resources of this small county and the state of California, and it hinders their investigation. Now, if this was the first time that the FBI hindered an investigation, I wouldn't bother mentioning it on this particular program, but I think almost every week on Dialogue Conspiracy, I bring up instances where the FBI hinders investigations. So one has to ask themselves, are they doing this to protect possible agents of theirs, such as those in the Emil Zapata arrest up in the Bay Area that were supposed to be radicals bombing the Safeway and the electric companies, and turned out that two of them had been informers working with the FBI. Now, the public officials come out of mothballs. As I say, it's an election year, and it gives them a very good, strong point on not condoning violence and terrorism in America. The school busing has been an election issue. In 1972, Charles Colson wrote in his book how Richard Nixon used it to fire up the racism and the extreme right to get votes on the busing issue. Gerald Ford has been in the hot seat because of the Boston busing issue. So in a case like this where white men take children on a rural road, you can end all long-distance busing, and it doesn't appear to be racism, even though the black and white children who gain advantage from busing aren't considered. The next step will be can't have guards on every bus. We can't send them long distance. Nothing is safe. So the school bus trip is very important. And then there's dangers of having police or guards on school buses. When LaGuardia Airport was bombed in December 75, every locker in almost every airport in San Francisco was closed, and you couldn't leave packages there, and there are police all over the airports. When people die in car accidents, such as July 4th, where several hundred people died, we didn't take cars off the road. People die in boating accidents. We don't take the yachts off the harbor. When Francis Tavern was bombed in New York City, we didn't close every restaurant. But the airports, the roads, the false bombing scare at the Greyhound stations, the school buses here, every method of transportation would be closed off with security guards so that even people who want to leave this country eventually or go from one city to another will not have the method of getting through these stations by placing these guards. It can't be that these are life-saving devices because we're losing lives in a lot of other areas, such as even adding chemicals to food and in factories and polluting the air. But the methods of transportation are being cut off in our little local Carmel Monterey Airport. There are three fully clothed, obvious, visible policemen, plus many other security people in a little dinky airport like this where nothing is happening. So when you take school buses or commercial buses, airports, and close them off on the basis of this losing lives, where they're not interested in lives in other places, you have to wonder whether school children will have armed guards and a security system will come over on the street that provocateurs have instigated. Now, the children were taken without any messages. There were no written messages on this type of kidnapping. And we heard references over the past week from several books written years ago about kidnapping. But we didn't hear anything about the Manson family. And when I say Manson, I don't mean Charles Manson. I mean the people that were behind that entire operation. There's one quotation of Ed Sanders in the book The Family, which is the story of the Manson family. It's on page 185 of my volume. It says, Manson and his gangs and bikers and women were avowed racists, and they were waiting for the great white-black war to take shape. Sanders wrote, one of the Manson's dune buggy fantasies was to kidnap schoolgirls when they get off the school bus in rural areas and snatch them, and take them to a desert hideout. Another reference to kidnapping school children is in Argosy magazine, September 1970, and it has to do with the last messages of the Zodiac Killer. And I don't know how many of you in the East or in California remember the last time that the dreaded Zodiac Killer surfaced. He had sent a message claiming that he had killed 34 people in California. But his very last message that he said, I'm going to go after school children and I'm going to change my method, he warned. He said, school children make nice targets. And he said, this is my first warning. Harper's Magazine in May 1974 had an article on California massacres. And they quoted again the Zodiac. He said, I will change my method to make killings appear as robberies, anger, or fake accidents. And I think of the Carmichael Bank robbery in California near Sacramento, where a woman was killed. The police said they had 8 suspects, but they were not going to charge any of them. Stephen Celaya was charged and held, even though there was perjury or the testimony was not truthful about where he was the day that this woman was murdered. There was a case of a robbery. A woman was shot down on the street, and the other suspects were allowed to be free and not arrested. Was the bus that went from Yuba City, which links to the Zodiac modus operandi, and the brakes were removed, was that bus a fake accident involving school children? Because he said, I'm going to change my method. And the point is that the John Fraser trial of Dr. and Mrs. Oda and the children's secretary, where John was charged with those killings, was linked to Yuba City, the home of the Corona killing, and also where the Zodiac was operating. He gave this first warning. He said, I'm contemplating mass slaughter on the bus. And that was the last time we heard from the Zodiac Killer. I have a copy of a letter that a woman sent to Judge Charles Franick, F-R-A-N-I-C-H, at the time that John Fraser was being charged with the killing of the Oda family. And she wrote to him, I have the letter at home, and I read it to law enforcement agents in Sacramento and San Francisco today, asking if they were familiar with it, because she claimed that the Zodiac Killer was sitting in the back of the courtroom, and that he had always said, this is the same person who was going to kidnap children and be on the bus someday. And she said John Fraser would look back at him in the courtroom and maybe was afraid that they would kill his wife if he said anything. This woman wrote to Judge Franick that the International White Guard, a racist organization, was responsible for the Oda killing and had set up Fraser, the International White Guard. I think international is interesting because one of the three men that the children heard in Chowchilla, California, spoke with a French accent. It may or may not be anything, but I think it's worth investigating. The method of kidnapping this week in Chowchilla would lead to the same mentality as the International White Guard, and the only people to gain from this would be the racists, the people that are afraid of strangers coming through, and even though they weren't done, the kidnappings weren't done by white people, the racists use it for election politics, so it serves the same purpose. And the Zodiac, as I say, was going for the school children. I think that the officials in San Francisco were not appreciative when I asked them about this information about the White Guard. I called a man in Sacramento today who is in charge of all handwriting of the Zodiac. No handwritten document has been presented in regard to the Chowchilla affair, but he told me that the Sacramento criminal investigation is considering it as a Zodiac operation. He told me that today, and he worked for law enforcement for approximately 28 years, and he's still and always assigned to the Zodiac case, but even without a note, he told me in Sacramento they're considering it. I talked to Don Fried in Los Angeles yesterday. He did a lot of work on the SLA story and the Robert Kennedy assassination, the John Kennedy assassination, and he told me that the law enforcement and the researchers are also considering the fact that this is a Zodiac racist operation, this removal of the children and their bus driver. I spoke with Sergeant David Toshi, T-O-S-C-H-I, San Francisco Police Department today. He was furious and angry with me for talking. He was very rude. I gave him a little bit of my background. I asked him if he knew the International White Guard. I asked him about links of the Zodiac killer to the killing of Dr. Oda family and Frazier taking the rap for that. And then I asked him some more. I gave him the name of a man who's been named by four different people and in letters to me researching the matter as being the Zodiac killer, the one who was at the Frazier trial sitting at the back of the room. I gave him the name of this person, and he said to me, this is David Toshi of the San Francisco Police Department. He said, yes, I heard that name 5 years ago. We had his name 5 years ago. And I said to him, then you cleared it. He isn't the Zodiac killer. Then I can rule that out in my research. There isn't any link of him to the International White Guard. He said, no, he wasn't cleared. I said, was he charged? He said, no, he wasn't charged. He wasn't cleared and he wasn't charged. I said, did you ever call before a grand jury? This particular man that was named, his sister had died, his brother-in-law had died. His name was linked to those murders. You didn't do any more investigation on it or check his eyeglasses to those found at the Sharon Tate home, to prescriptions that Dr. Oda might have been responsible for. And he said, who are you? Why do you want to bring this up? I said, have you reached the Chowchilla Police Department to compare the drawing of the Zodiac killer made from various impressions to their suspect, the one wearing the hat? He said, no, I'm not involved in that. And I said, well, if the Chowchilla authorities and the L.A. authorities and the Sacramento authorities think that there's a possible link to the Zodiac and you're the prime man in charge of the Zodiac killing, how come you haven't thought of it? And he said, send me a letter with what you've got. I can't talk to you. I'm busy. I said, I won't send you the letter. I'll come see you and hand it to you. I want to see you eye to eye. I said, you haven't compared the pictures? He says, where do you get the pictures? I said, the front page of the Chronicle this morning and the front page of the San Jose Mercury. He said, I'm not interested. And the point I'm trying to make of all this is that law enforcement in Sacramento and in Los Angeles, where I've spoken, are concerned of a link of this operation to these other California violences, and the San Francisco policeman in charge of the Zodiac area was not only defensive and antagonistic, but didn't rule out the very person that I was naming as having a role in these California violences. Now, what happens when you become suspicious of these cases is the way they're operating, the way they're coming down, is you look for the hard evidence. The man who was kidnapped with the children, the bus driver said a white bus came and picked us up and a black bus. And the man saw broad daylight. He was not blindfolded. A white bus and a black bus. But all a van that took them away in two vans. But yet the police were looking for a white van and a blue van. And by Saturday, they were looking for a blue and a green. By Sunday, it was Army green. By Monday, the two vans were bought from Army surplus. I think of Squeaky Fromm, who got her weapon from a man who worked in the Army at McClellan Air Force Base for over 20 years. Sarah Moore got her weapon in San Francisco from alcohol, tobacco, and firearm agents. She went over with him to get a weapon that was to shoot at Gerald Ford, with her links with the San Francisco police again and the FBI and CIA. So now their vans are supposed to have come from Army surplus. Is the confusion in color to help make a getaway? Because when you've done research into the John Kennedy assassination, you know the confusion, the identifying of Oswald without any reason to believe Oswald would have a description known to the police department as soon as Kennedy was killed, or the diversion of getting people towards Lee Harvey Oswald and away from the killers who left town, or the Hibernia bank robbery in San Francisco that the SLA did, where we were told two green cars took them away, and yet the cars located just a few blocks from the FBI weren't found for several days, and they were found by local people and not by the FBI. And I think of James Earl Ray and the assassination of Martin Luther King, where the wrong information was given on radio bands while they led. And I think the discrepancy in car color is inexcusable. Another question is the identification of the kidnappers. Why is there any mystery? The children said, and the bus driver said, one man had a mustache and a tattoo on his arm, eagle tattoo, and another man had a mustache and a goatee and a green and blue tattoo on his arm. Don't you think it's interesting that the faces of the men on television and in the newspaper have no mustache and no goatee at all, no hair on their face at all? So what you have is a composite drawing, but it doesn't explain why they've left the hair off. And then they have not drawn the type of tattoo on their arm. And you wonder why men kidnapping 26 people would allow tattoos on two arms out of three, why they didn't wear sleeves or jackets, and how they were able to see these tattoos. The FBI, as I say, drew out of the case. The local authorities are very angry about this. And the motiveless crime, one more motiveless crime, goes on. Now, one of the things I worried about was that there were two or three jailbreaks or violences at the time of political conspiracy trials in California taking place. And this is the long weekend when the San Quentin 6 jury is sequestered. They've been hearing this case for a year and a half. This was a criminal conspiracy set up to kill George Jackson and to frame some political activists in San Quentin. And I was hoping that this case would be sequestered, because without one bit of evidence of who kidnapped the children, not an iota of evidence linking them to San Quentin 6, the radio was projecting rumors that it was terrorists or the San Quentin 6, and that the bus driver would possibly send notes. Not the bus driver, but the people who kidnapped them would send notes saying, free the San Quentin 6. So I hope that they were busy sequestered, which they were supposed to be. And then on national news, CBS last night or NBC, I hear that the jury for the San Quentin 6 took an unusual proceedings. They went to some area for a picnic in a park and left their sequestered area on an outing. And I wonder if anyone in the trash cans or the ladies' room or the men's room left any newspapers for them to see about the violence in California and the missing children and the bus driver, or the possible hint on a car radio or anything that the San Quentin 6 might be released and link them. Just subliminal suggestion of this kind of violence. I spoke to Don Freed. He's close to Charles Geary and close to the case up there. They had the same feelings, but they felt that the trial was going so well that they didn't think it would influence the jury at this point after a year and a half. But there is that suggestion of continuous violence or terrorism, or should we let them out, or where will they go? And it is interesting that the weekend that they're deliberating, the news media is using the name of the trial, and yet without any evidence at all to link them to those six men who've been locked up for 5 years already and should have been out a long time ago. Another thing I know is that in this terrible time of elections up till November, we will have lots of violences. And there was this phone call to Mayor Jim Dumas in Chowchilla, California, saying, the children have been found, but it's not over. There will be others. It was a female voice, and they hung up. There was a anonymous phone call, such as the kind at Dealey Plaza when John Kennedy was killed. It was a tip-off. Go to Klein's, Chicago, a rifle was purchased by Lee Harvey Oswald, and they hung up. The calls from South Carolina. The FBI didn't find the weapon. The anonymous call did. In this case, an anonymous telephone call came into the authorities. Livermore can be famous if the cops would go to a certain area. The site of the rock quarry was named, where the victims were hidden. This is a quote, a call. So you have your U-2 planes, your flight patrols, your command centers, your National Guard, your local state police, the FBI, the tip-off, and meanwhile, somebody, as part of the operation, wants us to know it's going to last a long time, but the tip-off told them to go to the site of a rock quarry where the victims were hiding, and it didn't come from the use of any great military hardware that was called in at the time. Now, there was the see no evil, hear no evil syndrome, which takes place in these assassinations. I remember at the time that the Manson family was at Sharon Tate's home. There was a young person living on the grounds, housekeeper, who was arrested and then released, who didn't hear the shooting of a guest in front of the house. He didn't hear the screaming as five, six people were slit apart. The Weimaraner dogs didn't bark. Nothing happened. He just slept. And it's that same kind of scene at Rock Quarry when the bus driver and the students climbed out and began to get themselves out. They went just 200 feet away to a gentleman working at the rock quarry and said, call the sheriff, and he called the sheriff, and he was called a maintenance man. A maintenance man pulled a gun at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was shot, worked at Lockheed. What is a maintenance man? This was a maintenance man at the quarry, and he called the sheriff. There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle today. It said, one of the pressing and unexplained mysteries of the case was how the kidnappers managed to prepare the dungeon for their young victims without having been spotted either by residents of the nearby housing development or employees of the California Rock Gravel Company. The site itself lies 100 yards from the quarry and has not been used for more than 2 years, but a resident of the housing development said the main quarry road is very popular. It leads to widely used swimming holes. And they wondered how in the world these children were taken from Chowchilla to this quarry, and there was a man in attendance 200 yards away, a maintenance man. They saw him. They said, call the sheriff. He had the facilities nearby in case anything unusual was taking place at the property. And yet a big van could be put there with air vents. These men could come working, obviously, on this and covering it up, drive it into a big hole. It seems to me that the guards at that rock quarry would know that a hole that big or that type was vacant one day if it's 200 yards away or nearby, and then covered the next day and see people driving on and off. If he was just there, according to the paper, he was there in case anything unusual took place on the property, and something very unusual was taking place. But like the person living next on the property next to Sharon Tate, I call it the see no evil, hear no evil syndrome. Another problem here we have is that the courts are trying to decide whether to get tough on the death penalty law. Canada just outlawed all death penalty. The United States is giving options to the various states and getting towards harder on death penalty. I turned on the TV this morning, Good Morning America, and there's a congressman saying, death to hijackers, death to kidnappers. I'm not sure that the right thing isn't to kill people who terrorize and take lives. I'm against the death penalty, actually, because I feel the patsies take the break, and the people that plan the operations go on and plan further operations so that these people get involved in things for patriotic reasons or otherwise and don't really know what they're doing. And when you kill them, then you break the chain of command, just like if you take out the brains out of Mr. Kemper and don't know who he was working for. But the point is that while death penalty is a heated argument, this serves a purpose by bringing in the issue of death penalty into the news. When the Republicans need an election campaign, it serves their purposes to talk about violence and terrorism. When busing is an issue and the Republicans will be charged with racism, you can get guards at school buses and stop the busing without being noticeable. And you get seeds of mistrust like Nazi Germany. You get the military police are called in your command centers, and the people are now saying in the news and on television, we were a happy town. We never locked our door. We never locked the car. Now, in quotes, no one is going to trust anybody, end quotes. Quote, we used to keep our doors unlocked. Now it scares you. You're going to lock them, end quotes. And then you see a picture, God Loves America, and it competes with the religion of Jimmy Carter. And meanwhile, the people that saved the children were those that had the vision to pile up the mattresses and find a stick and dig their way out. We don't stop TV violence. We condone it. And we don't stop the killing by stopping the people from showing killing on our screen. And death penalty isn't going to be the answer unless we stop the teaching by turning the knob every single station. You get killings of some form or another. And I think that this kind of violence helps promote the school to study the causes of violence that Ronald Reagan had long planned, of taking people to secret night bases and opening up their brains and finding out what's happening. So the school children were kidnapped with their bus driver at Chowchilla, California. It's an election year, and it gives you law and order. It brings out the FBI and their command posts, the police on the streets. And I'm very suspicious of the whole operation. It will take a lot of following and a lot of work to see where it leads, but I'm pretty sure it's going to tie back to what I call the California syndrome, otherwise translated as Watergate West. Well, we'll do some more next week, hopefully on Jimmy Carter. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next Monday.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for many years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.